Cookies. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the show, Gina Bennett brings us Ask a Teacher. We also have reports from Anna Mateo and Dan Novak. And we close the show with An American Story, Feather Top by Nathaniel Hawthorne. But first, the horse changed human history. And now, scientists have a clearer idea of when humans began to change the horse. Around 4,200 years ago, one particular lineage of horse quickly became dominant across Eurasia. That is when humans started to spread domesticated horses around the world, says research published Thursday in the journal Nature. There was something special about this kind of horse. It had a genetic difference that changed the shape of its back, likely making it easier to ride. In the past, you had many different lineages of horses, said Pablo Labrado. He is an evolutionary biologist at the Spanish National Research Council in Barcelona and co-writer of the new study. The genetic diversity is evidenced in ancient DNA from archaeological sites across Eurasia dating back as far as 50,000 years. But this study of 475 ancient horse genomes showed a notable change around 4,200 years ago. That is when one lineage first came about in what is known as the Pontic-Caspian Steppe. The area goes from what is now northeastern Bulgaria, across Ukraine, and through southern Russia. The lineage began to show up all across Eurasia and quickly replaced other lineages. Within 300 years, the horses in Spain were similar to those in Russia. We saw this genetic type spreading almost everywhere in Eurasia, said co-writer Ludovic Orlando of the Center for Anthropobiology and Genomics of Toulouse in France. Orlando added that this spread from one place to worldwide was very quick. The researchers believe that the change began with the people called the Sintashta, who had domesticated their local horse population. They started to use these horses to help them greatly expand their territory. Domesticating wild horses on the plains of Eurasia was a process, not a single event, the scientists say. Earlier studies of ancient teeth remains found evidence that humans drank horse milk around 5,500 years ago. The earliest evidence of horse ridership dates to around 5,000 years ago. But it was the Sintashta who spread across Eurasia the kind of horses they had domesticated, the new study suggests. Researchers believe the very earliest horse ancestors arose in North America. Then they spread across the Bering Strait into Asia around 1 million years ago. They did well in Asia, but went extinct in the Americas. People had domesticated other animals several thousand years before horses. Animals like dogs, pigs, cattle, goats, and sheep all came before horses. But the new research shows that the shrinking genetic diversity linked to domestication happened much faster in horses. Humans changed the horse genome very quickly, perhaps because we already had experience dealing with animals, said Laurent France. He studies the genetics of ancient creatures at the Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich and was not involved in the study. It shows the special place of horses in human societies, he said. I'm Katie Weaver.
A team of international researchers says that climate change made recent flooding in southern Brazil twice as likely to happen. It also said that the El Niño Pacific Ocean Current made the rains in Brazil more severe. Last month, flooding killed more than 170 people and displaced nearly 580,000 in Brazil's southern state of Rio Grande do Sul. Local officials said it was the worst disaster in the area's history. A network of experts called World Weather Attribution said that the heavy rainfall in Rio Grande do Sul was an extremely rare event. The group said it expects such an event to happen only once every 100 to 250 years. However, the group added, it would have been even rarer without the effects of burning fossil fuel. The experts at World Weather Attribution also said the flooding was 6 to 9% more severe than it would have been without climate change. The experts combined weather observations with results from climate models to make their estimates. Lincoln Alves is with Brazil's Space Research Center, INPE. Alves said, the climate in Brazil has already changed. He said that the study confirms that human activities have contributed to more intense and frequent extreme events. He added that the flooding showed Brazil's vulnerability to climate change. The researchers said that the El Niño Pacific Ocean Current also played a part in the flooding in Brazil. Experts say the El Niño phenomenon contributes to higher temperatures in many parts of the world. It also brings increased rainfall and flood risk to parts of the Americas. The scientists added that failure of important infrastructure, deforestation, and the fast growth of cities helped to increase the effects of the disaster. The flooding affected Porto Alegre, the capital of Rio Grande do Sul. The city is home to 1.3 million people. Regina Rodriguez is a researcher at the Federal University of Santa Catarina. She said that good flood protection infrastructure and the right urban planning are needed to reduce the effect of such extreme events. I'm Ana Mateo.
The number of aquatic animals harvested worldwide by farming is now higher than the amount fished from the wild, the United Nations found. Farmed aquatic animals include fish, shrimp, clams, and others. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, recently released a report on fisheries and aquaculture, or farming in water. The State of the World's Fisheries and Aquaculture report noted that, for the first time ever, more aquatic animals came from farming. In 2022, the report said more than 167 million metric tons of aquatic animals were caught and harvested. It found the amount captured in the wild dropped to 82.5 million metric tons as farm production rose to 85.6 million. Asia was the source of more than 90% of all aquaculture production of aquatic animals, the FAO added. Some 90% of aquatic animals that are farmed or fished are for humans to eat. The rest are for other uses like feed for other animals or fish oils. Experts say it is not surprising that the number of farmed fish is now higher. The amount caught from waters has not increased much over the last 30 years, largely because of limits in nature. Manuel Barange leads FAO's Fisheries and Aquaculture Division. He said aquaculture has gained from a growing recognition of the nutritional benefits found in aquatic animals. Food taken from aquatic animals also creates a smaller environmental impact than food taken from land animals. The most common fish that are captured in the world's oceans, seas, rivers, lakes, and ponds include Peruvian anchovies, skipjack tuna, and Alaskan pollock. Freshwater carp, oysters, clams, shrimp, tilapia, and prawns are among the most harvested animal life. I'm Dan Novak.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Anna in Brazil about the difference between feel and feel like. Hi, guys. I've learned a lot from VOA English. I'm so grateful for helping us with our difficulties on English learning. My question is about the use of the verb to feel. What's the difference between feel and feel like and other uses of this verb? And if its use is followed by a verb plus ing. Thank you so much in advance. Ana Lucia from Brazil. Thank you for writing, Ana. We're happy you learn a lot from learning English. And I'm happy to answer your question. The verb feel has many meanings in English. It can mean to experience an emotion. I always feel thankful to my parents. Or experience something in your body. She felt a pain in her back. Feel can mean to touch something. I feel the rough sand under my feet. Or to describe the weather. It feels cold outside. Feel can also show an opinion. Do you feel strongly about the situation? He feels sure we are right. Feel like is a phrasal verb. We often use feel like in a sentence to go with someone or something and doing something. Feel like someone or something means that you are similar to the person or thing. My feet feel like blocks of ice. Maria feels like her mother. Feel like doing something means that you want to do it. This is when the verb is often followed by ing. Jose feels like eating ice cream. She feels like watching a movie. Sometimes feel like can be used in this way without ing. Jose feels like ice cream. She feels like a movie. It is understood that he wants to eat ice cream or that she wants to watch a movie. And we also use feel like to show an opinion. I feel like this isn't a good idea. We hope this explanation helps you, Anna. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
Now, the Learning English Program, American Stories. Here is Shep O'Neill with Feather Top by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry, and when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those black birds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch, a woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill, or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already it began to look like a man with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes and made another cut lower down that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat, she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. "He can do something better," she thought, "than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows." And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?"
"Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that."
Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said,
"Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance."
But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother," Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. "On your way," Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. "The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop. For you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head." Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. "What a fine, noble face," one man said. "He surely is somebody," said another. "A great leader of men." As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly, the man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
That's all the time we have for today's show. But join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Reed.